Welcome. This is the Common Geeking Program. It is a book club, also known as a common reading program for geek culture. Each episode, we pick a topic and four people discuss it from geeky, nerdy perspectives.
Cowabunga.
I think we're in the third cycle now. Like, we call it cycles whenever we go through.
Season three?
Season three. We have eight episode seasons because we're clutch as fuck. We're like Stranger Things. We're the Stranger Things of podcasts. We're that good.
Three more seasons than a movie.
Well, that or we're like a shonen anime, you know? No breaks in between seasons.
Nobody is talking about anime on my
Speaking
episode.
Speaking of six seasons in a movie, though, today I was like, oh, man, like, I'm going to talk about, you know, Tomb Raider on the podcast. Let me do a little research. And then I accidentally binge-watched season six of Community instead.
I often get those two confused.
There's a man who knows how to find his research.
You britted it.
Okay, so joining me in this episode, first, we have a gentleman named...
Hey, my name is Edward Ryan. And today I'm going to be talking about Lara Croft in the Tomb Raider franchise.
All right. Now, in this episode, we also have a special guest, video game enthusiast, collector, and pain in my ass.
I like that part.
Introduce yourself.
My name's Devin McConnell. I'm going to be repping Crash Bandicoot.
Fantastic. And our third representative is the trusty, reliable, good old episode one alum.
Hi, I'm Daimel, or Chowder, whichever you prefer.
I prefer Chowder. I think we've been over
Well,
this.
I would like to be known by my name, but...
This is showbiz. You get the name people give you.
Dude, you're welcome, by the way, for that nickname.
Wait, Eddie, is this your fault?
Yeah, dude. In like seventh grade.
I didn't know you guys then.
Me neither.
Yeah, you were homeschooled then.
Listen, the world doesn't need to know about my disabilities. So, Chowder, what are you repping?
Mario from the Super Mario Brothers.
So those are our three domains, and those are tying back to our topic. And this week, I have picked the topic of Sonic the Hedgehog. Now, it's going to be a little different. We're not discussing any particular game or show or Sonic Schoolhouse. We're not discussing any particular thing. I just want to talk about the character, his legacy over the last 25 years. He just had a birthday.
Happy birthday, bro.
They grew up so fast.
Sonic's the name. Speed's my game.
What his games have been like, what the reception has been, and what it's going to be like going forward. So this is a little bit of an experiment on my part. Let's see how it goes. So, the original Sonic the Hedgehog. Now, I should also disclose to the audience, Devin is a bit of a connoisseur of classic video games, fart sounds and raspberries, and he knows quite a bit about the companies we're going to be discussing. I have given him free rein to insert corrections and fact checks throughout the episode wherever needed.
Fuck.
I agree.
So this might be the most accurate episode of Common Geeking Program yet. We'll see what happens.
I don't know why J.J. Abrams is directing this episode of the podcast. I got
You got that serious flair. Do you have J.J. Abrams standing behind your laptop beating the camera to give it a shaky effect?
Yeah.
Actual thing he did on the Star Trek movies. This is not a Star Trek podcast. Ah! So we're going to kick off this little summary by just talking about our good old friend, our blue blur, Mr. Sonic the Hedgehog, Mr. Needlemouse. First Sonic the Hedgehog game released on the Sega Genesis / Mega Drive, and it was a 16-bit game that featured a little 3-foot-tall blue hedgehog, and he's super duper fast. The whole gameplay hook is that this game was speedy. It was quick, where games at the time were often slow, methodical.
You're too slow!
You would get golden rings, which help you survive. You would collect these things called Chaos Emeralds. What does that plastic egg have to do with this podcast, Edward?
Nothing, dude.
Well, you know, Eggman.
Did I say it? Oh, yeah. That's what it was.
So Eggman, known in the Americas at first as Dr. Robotnik, captures all of Sonic's animal friends and put them into robots.
Get a load of this!
So the first few games, all you're doing is breaking the robots, freeing the animals, and killing Eggman. Well, not killing him, but setting him on fire so his face is all red. Those first couple games, Sonic 1 in 91, Sonic 2 in 1992, and Sonic 3 and Knuckles in 93 and 94, over those 4 years, those are his highest rated games. And Sonic 1 is still his best selling game of all time.
But near double, right?
And even if it was right, to be fair, it came with the Sega Genesis, didn't it?
Yep.
But basically, these first games all held the same 2D left to right side scrolling mechanic. His next mainline game came in 1998. Sonic Adventure, they changed it from 2D to 3 dimensions.
Wait, so I need us to backtrack for a second. So wait, which one sold better than Sonic 1? Because what I'm looking at, it looks like Sonic 1 sold the best.
So yeah, on Wikipedia, it's saying Sonic 1 sold 15 million. On the actual Genesis, I think it sold 3 million? 3.5?
Oh, is that counting in like remasters and stuff?
Maybe.
That can be really hard to measure because it was included with the system.
But in terms of standalone units, Sonic the Hedgehog 2 sold 6 million. And speaking from experience, Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is a dope motherfucking game. Did you guys play the Sonic games growing up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually had a Sonic the Hedgehog 3.
That's a good one.
I had 2, and I had Sonic and Knuckles.
You had Sonic and Knuckles as a kid? Jesus.
Actually, I also played, like, you know, Sonic Heroes and Shadow the Hedgehog when it was on the GameCube.
My earliest memory is Sonic 2 on the Genesis.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
Dude, my earliest memory is learning to ride a bike. Just thought you might be curious.
Was it like while you were falling down, you suddenly became a cognizant human being?
No, I didn't fall. I learned.
I'm tired of you. You're trying to pretend you're better than us. Go fall over on a bike.
Colin, I've always said I like your friends more than you because of how little they like you. I started off with Sonic Adventure, so.
So Sonic Adventure kicked off a new generation of Sonic the Hedgehog from 98 to like 2004. He lived on the Dreamcast, the Xbox, and the GameCube. You had Sonic Adventure, Sonic Adventure 2, and Sonic Heroes. And these games took like a third-person perspective. So it was a 3D world, the camera is behind Sonic. Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure 2 were reviewed really well and were lots of fun. There's some great songs that a lot of people still sing today. Insert clip of Escape from the City.
Insert clip of Colin whistling at work.
I whistled Green Hill Zone.
For 4 years.
And Sonic Heroes didn't do quite as well. Sonic Heroes included a lot of weird little side characters from earlier games that nobody cared about, like, you know, Knuckles Chaotix.
And Knuckles.
That kind of gave way to probably the game that made me want to do this podcast, and where I think a lot of the conversation is going to move around. 2006 was a landmark year for our hedgehog.
It was a simpler time.
A game on Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 called...
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty, Gotta Go Fast.
Yep.
World at Fast. Modern Fastware.
Call of Duty 3, 06.
That just sounds like everyone in the game was, like, on Ramadan and, like, just couldn't eat or drink. Gotta go fast.
I gotta go fast. Where are you going? Nowhere. I'm just not gonna eat.
Not until sunset, at least.
Someone send that to Sonic's Twitter account so we can make a meme out of that.
Yeah, oh god, he needs to. I fucking
next Ramadan. Gotta fast.
You totally do that. So in 2006, Sonic the Hedgehog came out for Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. It was a real bad game. Like at this point, with the shift from 2D to 3D, people were starting to question the validity of the franchise. And then this happened. Have any of you played Sonic 06?
Mostly like in a Mystery Science Theater 3000 kind of make fun of the bad thing kind of way.
I played all of it because I'm that guy.
That is why you're a bad person.
So Sonic 06, it had horrible loading times, buggy gameplay. The gameplay when it worked was also not very fun. It was very slow. It had an interesting story, but then he made out with this chick and it was weird.
The story was convoluted.
It was, but it was like at least sort of interesting.
They have like the picnic scene from Attack of the Clones, except it's on the Windows 98 background.
Holy shit! That's the best description I've ever heard of that scene.
Then again, Sonic has a better reason to hate sand, so he sinks in it.
Sandopolis throwback. So Sonic the Hedgehog 06, that was a really bad game. After that, 2 years later, you had Unleashed, which was like better. They came out with this fast gameplay people liked. But you also had The Werehog.
Like, that game is like half brilliant, half mediocre or bad.
That's what all art is, Time Wolf.
Because like the day stages are everything you can want out of a Sonic game.
They're so fun.
But the Werehog stages, why?
But people were like, it's still better than Attack of the Clones on a Windows 98 background.
Now, if it had a motorcycle and a gun, though, now you're talking.
We don't talk about Shadow the Hedgehog.
You pick up a police car and chuck it.
Moving to 2010, you got Sonic Colors. Sonic Colors was pretty fun.
Sonic Colors was really fun, yeah.
They came out with Sonic the Hedgehog 4, which was supposed to be in the style of those first four games, that Sonic was really well-liked and really popular, and Sonic 4 was trying to recapture that. So on one hand, you had Colors with this fast, third-person, pretty, very engaging game, and you had Sonic 4, which was buggy and didn't look great, but kind of felt like classic Sonic. And then coming to his 20th anniversary, you had Generations. Generations was a game that paired both of those gameplays together in a single package. And it was awesome. It was fun. It had remakes of old levels, remakes of old music. It did pretty well in sales. It did really well in reviews. It got like, you know, B pluses, A minuses across the board. Which for Sonic, pretty fucking good at this point. This is where people started to think maybe Sonic is okay.
Did anybody think that? Or just
I thought so too, yeah. I thought Sonic was on the right track, and then, well...
So this is actually where I want to introduce a concept called the Sonic Cycle.
And Knuckles.
And the Sonic Cycle and Knuckles. Do you guys know what the Sonic Cycle is? It's actually kind of a gaming industry term now.
Go ahead and tell me about it.
So the Sonic Cycle.
But how does it work?
He curls up in a ball and spins really fast and then...
Oh, no.
So the Sonic Cycle is the idea that you have this thing that people want to like Sonic. Cool. You announce a game and everyone's like, oh shit. There's a new game. That's kind of cool. And then you see some gameplay and you're like, oh, wait, this looks good. And expectations go up. And then you're like, oh, my God, this game is going to be great. And then the game
is Sonic Lost World.
Is Sonic Lost World. And that's the next game that comes out. And Sonic Lost World kind of took all that fast gameplay and throws it out the window and actually gives you a button to slow him down. Like, there's a slow down button.
It's called the Mario button.
Yeah, the Mario button. They were ripping off Super Mario Galaxy, which, Devin?
No, they're ripping off Sonic Extreme.
There you go. Sonic Extreme was an unfinished game that people say Super Mario Galaxy ripped off.
Is that what you were looking for?
Yes. That's exactly what I was looking for. And Sonic Lost World got middling reviews, and that leads us to Sonic Boom.
Here come the boom.
The excellent song, not the game.
I don't know what song you're talking about. Can you give us
from
a little
Sonic
description?
Sonic CD, right?
Yeah, it's the theme from the Sega CD.
Oh, can you give me a little bit of what that sounds like?
The one where it's like, Sonic Boom, Sonic Boom, in the intro and outro to the game.
Did you guys know that on the original Sega, at the beginning of Sonic, when it was like, Sega, that took up like a quarter of the cartridge space.
This is kind of where I want to wrap up the summer, because Sonic Boom is the critical and financial low point of the franchise. Came out in 2014 on Wii U and 3DS. I bought both of them. I have finished neither of them. I have played every mainline Sonic game, including the ones like Shadow the Hedgehog.
The best
the
ones.
Edge.
Could not make it through Sonic Boom. This leads us, again, back to the Sonic cycle. If we look at the peaks and valleys, high points in the 90s, dips in the mid-aughts, now we are on the precipice of his 25th anniversary games, Sonic Mania, which is a callback to those four classic games, and Sonic Forces, which looks a lot like Sonic Generations.
Dude, that Sonic Mania trailer was so good.
It was so good.
I felt things.
Yeah.
And I don't even care that much about Sonic.
Mainly what I wanted to talk about today is how the legacy of this character, how his perception over the years is feeding into the development of new content, how maybe this could change the way that he looks going forward. That's the gist of it. That's a little bit of a messy summary, but we're out of time on that, so that's what we're talking about. We're gonna move on to the diggity domains. Let's do it.
Too easy. Piece of cake.
Any last words before we move on?
Don't make me sing again.
Tails. I just felt like we excluded him, so I wanted to just make sure we snuck that
in. We'll talk about Tails. Okay.
And Knuckles.
I want to talk about some other video game franchises. Let's talk to Eddie. Why do you want to talk about Tomb Raider, Eddie? Why do you care?
Right, so Tomb Raider is another long-standing game franchise. Not as long as Sonic, but pretty close. Also came out in the 90s. And it's got its main character, Lara Croft, who is not an anthropomorphized animal, but instead a human. And Alyssa wants you all to know that Lara Croft is indeed a sexy human.
Are we talking like the original Tomb Raider, where she had like one triangle for both tits? Because that was not what did it for me.
Triangles. No,
dude, triangle boobs are my thing.
Got those hard angles.
The 90s ending was a really sad time for me. Anyway. Okay, so the first Tomb Raider came out in 1996. Was pretty freaking popular. The original inspiration for the game was that the lead designer on it, he really liked Indiana Jones. And he was like, I want to make some kind of... But then one of the other people working on the game was like, hey, people probably won't relate this as closely to Indiana Jones. if we have a female main character, since Indiana Jones is a man. And he was like, great idea. I'll do some stuff.
Like, draw that one line on the polygon figure. Sorry, I need to talk about something besides the triangle tits.
Next week on Lessons in Cynical Diversity.
Originally, Lara Croft was Lara Cruz. She's a South American military lady. But then they dropped the military thing and they decided to go with archaeologist instead. So they were like, posh British. That's more archaeological than South America.
Well, you have my total attention now.
Is dual-wielding pistols also typical of archaeologists?
Yep.
I mean, it is typical of British people going into other countries.
That's true. Got them.
Facts.
Tomb Raider 2 came out a year later, and also really good. And what they did for that was they reused a lot of the same engine and assets, creating new codes for different gameplay styles and stuff. So that's how they were able to pump out like a pretty different game, because they reused a lot of the visual stuff.
But, like, changed everything on the back end.
And her front end.
The same. So, Tomb Raider 2, also a really good critical success. And then after that...
Did they spell it, like, the number 2 MB Raider?
No, I think it was, like, Tomb Raider, and then...
And Knuckles.
Two dashes. There you go. And then and Knuckles, the echidna.
Tomb Raider 2 and Knuckles. Anyway. You have to put the CD for Tomb Raider... into the cartridge expansion for Knuckles.
No, you actually just put two CDs on the same spindle in the PlayStation and roll at the same time. Special lock-on technology.
Yeah. So then Tomb Raider 3 comes out and gets not nearly as good reviews as the first two. And then Tomb Raider 4, they were like, all right, well, you know, the games aren't doing well, but we already, like, had this game in production before Tomb Raider 3 came out, so we're going to finish it. But they were like, but we think we're going to have to reboot after this one. So they kill Lara Croft off in Tomb Raider. And also that game got bad reviews as well. So then in 2000, they came out with like a remaster or something of the old ones for PlayStation 2. I don't remember. It doesn't matter.
And Knuckles.
And then in 2003, they rebooted the franchise with the game The Angel of Darkness. And in this one, Lara Croft looks a lot like Trinity from The Matrix.
A little late for that party, don't you think?
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be the first game in a trilogy of Tomb Raider games, but it did so bad that they were like...
That sounds a lot like Sonic Boom, where they were like, let's redesign the character.
So they scrapped the rest of that trilogy. Remember, Underworld... was the next reboot of Tomb Raider. That one did okay, and now it's been moved over to a different studio at this point. And then Square Enix bought the Tomb Raider franchise, and they were like, all right, we're gonna fix this shit. So then in 2013, they rebooted the series for a third time.
Was it The Charm?
And then that one is just called Tomb Raider.
This is Lara Croft.
It's so good.
2015, Rise of the Tomb Raider came out, which is a direct sequel to Tomb Raider. Also super good. The franchise is on a really good track right now. So is the popularity of the character. I skipped past the time period where the Tomb Raider movies came out.
Yeah.
Which
those were good movies.
They weren't. The first one was a very popular movie, though. And they actually, they were super rushed to release.
Well, that's what happened with Sonic 06, is they were rushed to meet the PS3 launch. Even Devin, Mr. Anything After 2001, is not a video game. What do you think of the new Tomb Raider games?
The new Tomb Raider games are fantastic. I just need to say that considering the amount of reboots involved in that sequence of events... I'm not at all surprised you ended up watching Community.
But yeah, no, Tomb Raider holds a special place, as it is a thing that has more reboots than Spider-Man. But that's kind of the basic summary of the Tomb Raider franchise to date.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. We are now going to... slide on over to our guest, Mr. Devin McConnell.
Be our guest.
Yeah, you're talking about Crash Bandicoot.
Yes, I am. When I think about, when you told me you wanted to do Sonic, I only think of things in relation to each other. So I thought, oh, Sonic, that's the mascot character. Gotta have Crash. Because that's the last time mascots were relevant like that, back then, like the mid-90s. And that's why I think Crash is actually the closest analog to everything you want to get at here about Sonic, because Crash is more or less, despite how much I love Crash, the red-headed stepchild of Sonic. literally.
He does have red hair.
Yeah, all orange.
And when it comes to anthropomorphizations, God, I may have butchered that word. Sonic is not great. What is Crash? He's basically a giant piece of toast.
Crash Bandicoot is a marsupial.
Yeah, but like marsupials don't look like giant pieces of toast.
Yeah, and hedgehogs don't look like blue things.
I didn't know giant pieces of toast were orange.
Well, it depends on, you know, what you're toasting with them. It's just, if they're anthropomorphized, they're supposed to be shaped like humans. Sonic kind of looks like a stupid kid. Crash looks like a piece of toast. Yeah, sorry, I digress.
Crash Bandicoot's amazing.
I'm not commenting on the quality of the character, just the toastiness.
No. But anyway, Crash's series story arc mirrors pretty closely what you described Sonic's fight me later. Story arc. Crash was intentionally, kind of artificially created to fill a gap that a platform maker needed to push their console. Naughty Dog came up with it for Sony to push the PlayStation back in the same time.
It's the mascot era.
Yep, yeah. Back when it was relevant. You'd have like a magazine cover with all of them on the front. It mimics Sonic in having that, bringing that attitude to a character. And just like with Sonic, mm-hmm. I think the one thing you might have been missing in the Sonic story is in 2006, not only were they rushed because they had the consoles coming out, but they were running out of their strategic supply of Sonic team members. Because that was also the year that most of Sonic team left, including Yuji Naka, who started the series.
Yep.
And that's what came to happen with Crash, too.
And that's always a nightmare when the experienced developers, like, up and leave, because...
They know what the game feels
more
like.
More importantly than that, they know how to run the pipeline that gets stuff made. Like, in any massive project, or even small projects, there's, like, an order in which you do things that gets things done efficiently, like...
Definitely explains Sonic 06 and the transition to Sonic Unleashed, because at that point they had a whole different team.
Mass Effect, Andromeda.
Here's the thing.
That suffered from just
not... I know this is not a topic of discussion for this podcast and will likely be cut out, but Mass Effect Andromeda, it has every excuse to be not a good game. It has no excuse to be filled with glitches. It had a 5-year development cycle.
So this has become the Mass Effect Andromeda throwing shade cast. Back to you, Devin.
I have so much to say about that. No, the Crash had the same experience Sonic did. You had those early Genesis games on the Sonic. You had the early excellent PlayStation 1 games on Crash, because that's when Naughty Dog was producing the series. After they moved on to do whatever struck their fancy, the making the next series of games, they did Jack and Daxter.
Jack and Daxter, yeah.
So good.
Just like the same way Naka moved on from doing Sonic to make Knights and other stuff that he liked to do, they kind of let Sonic linger, they let Crash linger, and eventually they lost the franchise altogether. It went on, Universal Studios owns Crash Bandicoot, because that's who Naughty Dog originally got in bed with to make the game, because they were just like 2 or 3 broke college students that moved across the country to make the game. So in the end, they didn't end up owning that character, that franchise, or that series, so whoever Universal Interactive Studios farmed it around to is who made the next game. So they've zoned it out to so many different little developers, some of which you haven't even heard of, some of which maybe you have, like Traveler's Tales, who's done some Sonic games, like Konami, who did some of the handheld games. They farmed it around so many times. There's probably like 9, 10, 11 different developers that have made Crash Bandicoot games. So that series, just like Sonic, Tail, like, just absolutely spun out of control.
It's Tails.
Shut up. But just like how everyone's getting optimistic to see Sonic come back with the release of the new games this year, Crash Bandicoot's having the exact same renaissance coming on, because they just announced last year they're going to remaster the first 3 games, the good ones, for PlayStation 4, and that's also coming out this year.
Do you think they'll farm it around to Square Enix and we'll get like a really dark, gritty Crash Bandicoot where he's like smoking cigarettes and like he just crashed on an airplane and he's just like picking apples to survive?
No.
That, or he becomes a waifish anime boy, you know, because they do Final Fantasy.
I
would play a Crash Bandicoot JRPG.
Like, Cortex's main motivation is to, like, free the people of suffering by killing everybody. So many Final Fantasy villains.
I'm interested for in the discussion when we compare Crash Team Racing to Sonic and Sega All-Stars.
Yeah. Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed is such a fucking good game. We're going to shift gears to our final domain for the episode.
Mass Effect.
Mass Effect Andromeda. So, Chowder, let's talk about Mass Effect Andromeda.
Mario Andromeda.
So, again, my domain is Super Mario.
It's me, Mario. Right? And,
Mario.
So, and Luigi.
Yeah, so like...
Luigi.
So like...
And Knuckles.
The character of Mario first got to start with the Donkey Kong arcade game.
Pronounced Danky Kang. Sorry, continue.
Pronounced Jumpman.
he was called Jumpman. You know,
I believe
like...
it's Mario Jumpman Mario and his brother Luigi Mario.
But like his first real breakout hit was Super Mario Bros., which was released in 1985.
Do the Mario, swing your arms from side to side.
Oh man, keep going. I was just gonna do it under you. Never.
So like that was like made side-scrolling platformers like explode. It like defined how
resurrected the video game industry.
Then we have Mario Bros. 3, and this
the wizard.
For those who don't know what he's talking about, it was first introduced in a movie called The Wizard.
I keep referencing weird movies.
Mario Bros. 3 was this big hit that like changed the game again. It has the same like kind of design philosophy of the first Mario Bros., but like brought up the scale. Like graphics are much nicer, the size of the levels are bigger, and it really like refined the controls of the game. Next up is Super Mario World, which came out for the Super Nintendo. Super Mario Bros. And Super Mario Bros. 3 were like about overcoming an obstacle, overcoming a challenge. Super Mario World had a bit more emphasis on exploration. Levels are much bigger than in Super Mario Bros. 3. You could take alternate routes. There were secret passages you could take.
Dinosaurs.
There were dinosaurs.
You're talking about big explorative levels, and I see a Skyrim map on Eddie's wall, and getting some good feels right now. All right, not to
since
switch
we
domains.
Interrupted time, if I could jump back real quick. No. Super Mario Bros. 3 is actually like super crazy amazing.
It is.
Like it was. Like, just the way they made the game, too. It's one of the first games that had, like, diagonal scrolling. Like, you could, like, with the cape and with
yeah,
the...
Yeah, Mario Bros. 3 was the Tanuki, World was the cape.
Yeah, and the screen had to move diagonally, which, like, hadn't really happened in games before that. The screen went, you know, on one axis at a time.
Next up, we have Super Mario 64. That brought Super Mario to the third dimension.
Okie dokie.
And that actually brought with it some issues. See, where the previous, like, challenge-based Marios really well in 2D, they found that those same things couldn't quite work out in 3D. So they took what Super Mario World did and brought it even further. They made it all about exploration. It's about finding stars, exploring a giant castle, going through paintings, and then exploring the world in those paintings. After that is Super Mario Sunshine. It's more of that exploration.
That was one of those games I played, like, nonstop on Walmart when it was on demo. So I've only played one level, but I played the shit out of it.
It's a good game. Underrated, I'd say. After that is Super Mario Galaxy. It added these gravity mechanics that really changed up the gameplay. I think the big change that it made was it became more challenge-based, like Super Mario Bros. And Super Mario Bros. 3. Mario Galaxy also had a more ambitious story. Like, it was still Save the Princess, but, like, it introduced a character named Rosalina, who was just really fascinating. It had a very melancholic feel to it. Never expect a Mario game to do that. Just pointing out, Mario Galaxy is like my favorite in the Mario games.
Fair enough.
After that, the 3D Mario games were also challenge and obstacle based. 3D Land, 3D World. Now we come to Super Mario Odyssey, and that is poised to be a return to like the exploration based Super Mario 64 and Super Mario Sunshine games. And that's interesting. You know, you got these two different kind of Mario games. Obstacle and exploration, and obstacle has been dominant for quite a while, so it's interesting to see them go back to the exploration style. After Super Mario Galaxy, fans started to feel like Mario was stagnating a bit. Like, the games are still phenomenal, but like, they didn't have that wow factor Galaxy did. And Mario Odyssey has me and quite a few people excited too, because it has that creativity that made people fall in love with Galaxy.
Well, let's hope it doesn't get Sonic cycled.
And Mario Odyssey will bring Mario into the real world with real people, and that worked perfect for
That's
Sonic.
True. Remember when he was King Arthur?
We don't talk about the storybook games.
I do want to say,
I've actually never played
Temu storybook games. Had a much harder job than the rest of us, in that Mario has about 80 more games than
this is true.
The franchises we talked about.
This is
yeah, and
true.
Like, the reason I chose to talk about Mario is because Sonic the Hedgehog was poised as the rival to Mario for such a long time.
Yes.
I mean, it was only true for like 4 years.
All 4 years.
All right, so I would like to actually move into the discussion. I want to ask, based on how we've seen with Sonic, people's poor reactions to games like 06, people giving feedback has had clear effects on the franchise. So, with your individual domains, how have public perceptions of the characters and franchises changed their development?
Well, I brought this up a little bit, how, like, you know, there was this, like, growing, like, sex appeal around Lara Croft. Like, they started marketing to that on the cover, instead of her being, like, holding guns in front of her. She's instead holding them at the side and, like, has, like, her chest accentuated, you know?
She could poke someone's eye out with those things.
And so that is just something that definitely affected, like, the games. Not on, like, a gameplay level, but on a marketing level.
Yeah, that's, like, yeah, I get that. Sonic, I'm used to the fan reaction actually pulling things in the right direction. That actually sounds like it went in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean...
Wrong direction.
Yeah, I mean, I can elaborate more on some stuff in a little bit. I just don't want to be the only one talking, which sometimes happens when I'm in a discussion on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, sometimes. No, I'm keenly aware of your Gold Star student history, and it is being taken into consideration.
That is racist.
God damn it.
Chowder, you look like you also wanted to answer this question before Eddie turned this into a guilting conversation. sit down, so sit down. It's everyone else's turn.
So, like, when it comes to public perception, I don't think that the people who make Mario, Nintendo, and give it as much thought as other companies do. They always kind of moved to the beat of their own drum. They went from exploration 3D Mario games to obstacle-based ones was a design decision. Like, the Wii did not have a second joystick, so they decided to make it more of an obstacle so that they didn't have to deal with a bad camera.
Similarly, I think what the Sonic games often do with their spin-offs is they try to explore new game mechanics. Shadow the Hedgehog, they introduce guns and cars. Other games like Knuckles Chaotix had the rubber banding thing, like a little gimmick to say, like, you can't move freely, you gotta move around it. Because they almost feel like experiments.
Yeah.
I don't know, I mean, I get it. I get that you need to do that.
If you can just edit in, like, the achievement unlock noise when you mention Knuckles Chaotix, that'd be perfect.
Sega finds itself in a strange situation where they're listening to what the fans say, but not the spirit of what the fans say. The fans always say, we want more Sonic Adventure. In a way, Sega is kind of giving that. Like, Sonic 06 and even Shadow and Sonic Heroes are all basically Sonic Adventure, but they take the worst aspects of Sonic Adventure. Parts where you have to play as the other characters, the parts where it all slows down, the ridiculous story. What people remember about Sonic Adventures was, like, the fast gameplay. The first level, the escape from the city, they remember...
I just really wish you guys would follow my rainbow.
They take the wrong lesson and they end up suffering for that.
Definitely.
Like, because, like, when they succeed, it's because they're expanding on the good parts of Sonic Adventure. The stages of Werehog, Sonic Colors. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Well, okay, so, yeah, actually, Devin, about Crash, I actually really want to focus that question, how has perception affected the franchise, on you, because I don't know anything about Crash, and we haven't had anything of Crash in a while.
They haven't made another Crash Bandicoot game probably in 5-6 years. Crash...
That recently?
Yeah, it's been a while. Crash Bandicoot, like I was saying in the description for it, like with Sonic, has kind of mirrored and had the same, almost the same exact flight of, well, disaster. almost at the same time that Sonic has.
They're both flying united.
because... During the early, like, 32-bit generation, like the PlayStation, the N64, when everybody had to change from 2D to 3D, the same problem that Sonic had, Crash also kind of has to a certain extent, in that only Mario really truly moved into 3D. They made Mario 64, they made 3D work for them. They made an open world where you wander around in 3D, it had a purpose to be in 3D. Crash Bandicoot's gameplay, and they talk about this thoroughly in the description of how they made it, was let's take a 2D style game. Their original models were Sonic, Donkey Kong Country, Mario, Super Mario World, and let's implement polygons, let's draw it in 3D, but otherwise the gameplay is still two-dimensional. You run left or right, or you run forward back. In fact, from one of the funniest tidbits from their description of developing it is that the original code name for it was Sonic's Ass Game. Because that was their idea of what it would look like is, well, okay, well, if we're going to develop a game where you are behind the character going forward in 3D, you're going to spend a lot of time looking at Sonic's ass. So that was one of the ways in which it very literally directly relates to Sonic.
This brings me to the sad realization of how much time I've spent looking at Sonic's ass.
Yep.
More than real people's asses.
Yep. On that question still, games like Crash and then when Sonic tried to go into 3D with Sonic Adventure... As much as Sonic Adventure does have a 3D space, it is still a fairly linear game and gameplay style. You go through the cityscape, you go through the beach, you go through the level. It's still, much like Crash does, goes forward in a linear 2D perspective. Yeah. Those games never fully transitioned to 3D, and a lot of games that came along in that era did not. And so generally, if you had to come up with a new idea, you toss the franchise away. Naughty Dog did exactly that. They overshadowed Crash Bandicoot when they made Jak and Daxter. Jak and Daxter and the next Crash Bandicoot game, Crash the Wrath of Cortex, came out the same year, the same holiday season on the PS2. And Jak and Daxter took it and ran away with it. But they made an actual 3D world a la Mario 64. And it was fantastic and beloved. And it became the Crash Bandicoot of the PS2 era, the crowning platformer that moved on and evolved on the genre. Crash did not, much like Sonic had not really been able to through at least the 2000s until probably Generations. So they just together kind of were on the same boat and being flung out to sea on an ice float together because they could not make the genre jump. So they had the same and shared the same fate in public opinion that they were irrelevant because they didn't make the move and move with the rest of the industry to go forward.
I'm actually going to use that to segue into my next question, which again is going to be for everybody. Sonic at this point, and in the Polygon article that I gave you guys, and this, the Polygon and Knuckles article that I gave you guys.
Miles.
Basically, they speak to one of the former executives at Sega, and I've read other interviews with some of these people as well, saying that Sonic is no longer the happy icon it used to be because people don't like him that much anymore. Another conversation I've heard around this, and one that really intrigues me, is what I want to ask is, do you think that some of the problems with these franchises come from maybe like an incomplete idea or a misunderstanding of what the character is about?
With Sonic, I've heard that argument before, and I don't think it works out, because Sonic was supposed to be built with the idea of being cool. But like, having an attitude has always kind of been the universal signifier of cool, and I don't think that's going to go out of fashion anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's from the development side of things that Sonic has been tarnished. The Sonic games have infamously had, like, really restrictive deadlines and...
Well, a counterpoint, Chowder, is that Mario actually releases probably more games than Sonic does.
But the mainline games come out once a generation.
Mario can also face similar deadlines and typically delivers higher quality. I think maybe the developers have a better idea of what Mario is, or
Mario
fans have
gets
a better
all the
idea
Mario gets all the time that Mario wants. They push back
true,
launches
yeah.
of systems
yeah, yeah.
for Mario.
Mario often gets lots
fair.
Of delays.
I think, but from my perspective, I think a lot of the problems that Sonic faced was because from really like the late 90s until, you know, what, like the 2010 maybe, gaming was in like this huge period of evolution where like everything was changing. Like each console generation was this huge, like crazy improvement. Like Devin was saying, when games moved to 3D, the developers had to move to 3D. If you were releasing a 2D game, people weren't going to buy it because people wanted the newest, coolest stuff. It was about the evolution of gaming, you know? And Sonic, I think, doesn't work in a lot of the ways that like modern games are. Sonic works super well in the style of old games, and I think a reason that something like Generations or like this upcoming Sonic Mania, the reason people like it so much and it can do so well is because those old games, like, they're different from the games that we have now, and they're good too, you know. And I think it's actually a testament to the popularity of Sonic as a character that he's still around after all those bad games that I think were destined to fail. I don't know if you could have made those games good. Like, if you had made them good games, they probably wouldn't have felt like Sonic.
Awesome. So, Devin, I want to give you a chance to, like, did you have anything you wanted to say on the question of maybe Sonic was misrepresented or misunderstood from the beginning, or do you have anything on that?
Yeah.
Because I have one other question.
Yeah, I think there's been, with Sonic's later downfall, there has been, like, some rewriting of history or retrospective to be like, well, Sonic was never good, or I do disagree with that analysis. The early games were great games. They fit that era and that genre very well. The 2D games are great 2D games. Sonic was made very well for that. I think just as it started passing around, it no longer kept the same feel of the original games as it changed to other developers who didn't know that original feel. They probably grew up playing those games and then were like, okay, like, what can I do with it now? Which is fine to experiment with, but if the experimentation doesn't work out that well, that's a little different.
Which, combining that with Chowder's point about the development of Mario, Mario has had that mainstay behind the scenes, and Sonic has had so many shuffles. Sonic has had so many shuffles. So this leads me to the last, and this is a quick point I just want to touch on, just quick blurbs from each of you, and then we'll move on. I guess my last question is, Eddie, how do you think all of this is leading us to Sonic Mania and Sonic Forces? And I hope you all got a chance to watch the two or three videos I sent you guys.
What I keep getting from some of these more recent games with Lost World and Mania and the new ones is, at this point, you're almost up to the point where folks that grew up with these games are now making these games. So you're kind of getting that nostalgia loop that we're experiencing as an industry, where folks that are now indie developers are making like 8-bit and 16-bit Metroidvania games right and left. Yeah. Now you've got folks who grew up with Sonic going, cool, I'm going to make a Sonic game again. And they have no foggy concept of what the new Sonic games have been like. So they're like, well, let's make a great Genesis game.
I wouldn't say that. Like, there's this indie game called Lost Planet.
Lost Planet was not an indie game.
It's a little indie studio you might not have heard of called Capcom.
Not Lost World.
Lost Planet Galaxy.
Just cut out what I say.
Lost Levels?
I have completely forgotten it.
Alright, can I jump in?
That actually bugs me about Sonic Lost World, is Lost World is the name of a level in Sonic Adventure, and then they named a game after it, and there was no relation. That's, I was like, damn you!
That's grimy.
Because different people made both games.
Alright, so...
That's a good point. Alright.
So I'm not going to go on as
long.
Hold on,
I have just remembered the name of the game. Jesus Christ. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, dude, don't worry about it.
I apologize. Freedom Planet. It is called Freedom Planet. The indie game is called Freedom Planet. It is basically Sonic the Hedgehog, but it's not. It's
in space?
No.
With a gun?
No, it's
and Knuckles?
It's taking inspiration from Sonic the Hedgehog's fast 2D style, and it's a pretty good game, yeah. So.
Right, cool. So I'm not gonna go on as long.
Oh wait,
as...
no, I didn't really say.
I fucking hate you. I know that I'm the interrupter.
I'm so confused. I don't know what's happening.
Well, I never actually said the thing. I was just commenting on what Devin was saying. You know, so
Devin McConnell.
That is his name. It is Devin McConnell. You're not wrong about.
Yeah, but it's weird to say.
Devin McConnell, attorney at law. All right, go ahead, Tom.
Here's the thing about Sonic Mania. A lot of people are hailing Sonic Mania as like a return to form, and like I feel like that hope is a bit misplaced because Sonic has had back to form 2D games. The Sonic Advance game and the Sonic Rush games were everything you could ever want out of a 2D Sonic.
None of them were styled like the old games, and also Christian Whitehead, the guy who's leading the development of Sonic Mania, did the ports of Sonic 1 and 2 to iOS, which are hailed as the best ports ever of those games, even better than the originals for people playing them. And it is a Sonic cycle, so we could be wrong, it could suck, and I could cry all over again. So, good point, that is my rebuttal. Eddie, bring it home.
So, the reason I brought Tomb Raider to the podcast was because I feel like they had similar problems, but for different reasons. Where Sonic, in a lot of the games, especially the ones people don't like, they super change up the formula. Now he's a werewolf. Now he's King Arthur. Now he's kissing this girl in the Window 98 background. And I totally understand that because they're like, okay, that last thing didn't work. Let's try this new thing. And it just kept not working. And sometimes it did work. You know, Sonic Generations works. Tomb Raider, I think, had a different problem. They kept making the same game over and over again, except they kept making it worse after Tomb Raider 2. Where Sonic was trying to change the formula. They were trying to come up with new exciting things, and it didn't work. And Tomb Raider was like, well, we have this thing that works. Let's just do that over and over and over again. And then, you know, people got bored of it and tired of it, especially because the, you know, games were getting worse gameplay-wise and full of bugs and glitches and stuff. And then what was the original question?
How do you think the legacy is informing these new games that are coming out?
Boom, got it. So now...
wrong reference, man.
Haha, my bad. Pow, I'll say that. Tomb Raider got to a point where Square Enix picks it up and they're like, let's restart, go in a very different direction, but keep the same feeling of the game, you know? And then Sonic, you know, they're like, okay, let's make this game and go back to form. And not just in the gameplay, in the visuals, in everything. So I think, you know, maybe the owners of these games have come to a point where they have figured out what works, hopefully, and are going to be able to execute on that from now on. So that's where I wanted to get to, and I got there. The end.
One of the areas that Sonic probably went wrong that we didn't necessarily bring up in these discussions, they particularly noted, and I'm going to quote from them, that they opted to keep Crash a completely mute character because, and I'll quote the developers at Naughty Dog, voices for video game characters are always lame, negative, and distract from identification with the characters.
I'm sorry, didn't they make Uncharted?
That was their opinion in the 90s.
Thank you for the rousing discussion. I'm glad that went so smoothly, that we had no technical interruptions, no miscommunications. This has been a flawless podcast that is not 20 minutes over what I wanted it to be.
Can't confirm.
So
I'm going to get started on the next episode podcast cycle, where I hope it's going to be really good.
Yeah, dude, season 3 is where they take a real dip on Comic Geek program. That was during the writer's strike.
I've seen some tentative previews of the next episode. It looks really good.
Let's get our hopes up.
They
for
never
that.
Made the transition to 3D.
So the rating section for anyone just joining us, which after looking at some numbers from recent episodes, a lot of people start on the latest and then go back. So the rating section, what I do as the host is I have each of the reps rate the topic that I picked on a scale of 1 to 5. And today, in case you couldn't guess it, the rating scale is going to be 1 to 5 golden rings. So first I want to start by asking you guys.
Wait, was there
the same
a Sonic
order
wedding
earlier.
Game? I don't know. What's the gold rings?
Is this a Christmas
Jesus
thing?
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yo. Devin's joke was way better than mine, and mine completely overshadowed his. I'm super sorry.
So this is super subjective. What do you think of Sonic? 1 to 5 golden rings. Eddie.
I like the boy a lot, but he's had some rough times. Man, I don't... All right, this is going to be hard. I don't know if anyone's given a rating this low on the podcast. I'm going to give Sonic the Hedgehog overall a 2 out of 5.
That is the lowest rating so far. I almost rated Full Metal Alchemist.
If I was just rating the good ones, I'd probably give it like a 4.
But Charmy the Bee is a character, so, you know.
And Knuckles.
So is what, Silver the and, Cat?
No, Silver the Hedgehog and Big the Cat.
We never
Big
brought up Amy.
Big the Cat is amazing.
Wait.
Okay, wait, Eddie, let me bring this up. Okay, we also should factor in Sonic's current social media presence run by Aaron Webber.
You talking about Sonic?
Sonic, oh my god.
Did you guys see that thing that happened like a year or two ago where there was this like Tumblr about Sonic that was run by like a bunch of people, and then they all had like all their like profile usernames or whatever were different Sonic characters, and then they got into like this huge fight on their own Tumblr. It's amazing. There's a bunch of like screenshots and archive posts of it. Like, you should definitely go check it out. It's amazing. And actually, I'm changing my rating to 3 out of 5 because I remember that.
Nothing personnel, kid.
I don't tumble really. But I did see that. It was great.
Was
Give
there.
Me one second. Right. You were there?
I was there.
You were there. You were one of the people?
No, but I saw that shit going down in
live?
Real time.
Oh, that's amazing.
Locked onto my dash.
That's amazing.
That is the voice of Alyssa Rodriguez, who was our guest representative on episode 10, chiming in to favorably change Edward's rating of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Come on, step it up.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go 3 out of 5.
All right, cool. Devin, if you had to rate Mr.
Yeah.
Needle Mouse.
Eddie's last minute adjustment by adding in the positive aspects of the online Sonic community just brought to mind the negative aspects of the online Sonic community. So my, which mostly includes like dark fan stories and other things I'm not going to discuss.
David the Hedgehog.
And
Kevin the Hedgehog.
I'm talking about the kinds of Sonic stuff you're going to find on DeviantArt.
No.
Boobs the Hedgehog.
That actually reversed. That reversed and balances out because it's taking my 3 coins out of 5 down to 2. So,
damn it.
Congratulations, you just balanced
Son
that out.
Son of a bitch. Everything sucks. All right, Chowder, what do you think of Sonic?
Thanks to Devin, he like dragged it down even further for me.
No!
Remember this, Colin.
Sorry, but I got...
Remember what they've done to you.
There are too many bad Sonic games for me to really give it the benefit of the doubt. I gotta give it 1 gold ring.
Jeez.
Whoa! Oh my god! This was a countdown to my heart exploding. 3, 2, 1, motherfucker.
If I were rating the good Sonic games, I'd give it 5 gold rings, but goddamn, the fan base,
Jesus.
The bad games, 1 gold ring, I'm sorry.
On the bright side, Colin, I give Crash Bandicoot 4 Wumpum Fruit out of 5.
I give Lara Croft Tomb Raider 2 triangles out of 2.
Jesus Christ. All right, so now here's the part of the podcast where I need to award a gold star student award to one of these assholes who just tore my childhood apart. Jesus Christ.
Is it too late to bring up the Christmas special?
I'm going to try and remove these heartbreaking last couple of minutes.
And we're
going
to try and remove these last heartbreaking couple of games.
From my delivery of the Gold Star Student Award to the person who maybe had, I think, the most direct insight to the development of my precious, horribly plagued Sonic. I'm going to award...
The gold Chaos Emeralds. The gold... Guns.
Well, I was gonna say Master Emerald, but I want to know if I want to go with something. I am going to award the Ener Beam grappling hook from Sonic Boom to Devin McConnell.
Rigged.
Really?
That doesn't sound like an award.
That's the fucking point. No, here's the thing. So at the beginning, I was thinking, I can't give Eddie this award. And then we got to Eddie's domain and I'm like, fuck, I'm going to have to give Eddie this award. I don't want to do it.
I did a great job. I don't want to do it. Award.
You can have it.
Thanks, man.
I think Devin pulled it out in the discussion, but I've made the award so disgustingly revolting and terrible that nobody wants it. So I'm going to give it to Devin. So, Ed, even though this is a loss, maybe you could count it as a win, because nobody liked the Ener Beam.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I have.
Are you giving a speech when Devin won the award?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you're supposed to give like a losing speech when you lose.
We've never done that!
So,
not once.
Here's the thing. I have self-sabotaged a little bit in that I kept gloating about my streak.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that you gotta understand, listeners. The streak will live again. I am the most highly decorated member of the podcast.
This is true.
And I will continue to be so. And next time I'm on an episode, I'm gonna win that award. That's right, Jeffrey, you heard me.
Now you know how Sonic feels.
And he enjoys streaking. Keep that in mind.
I fucking love streaking.
So I would like to thank none of my representatives, but all of my listeners.
Thanks, Devin, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you to Devin.
You really earned it, actually.
I figured this would be a good episode for him. So I guess that wraps it up. So again, I am Colin, and this week's topic was the much reviled Sonic the Hedgehog and his terrible legacy. You can check it out on your phones, on the Sega Mega Drive, the Sega Genesis, the Sega 32X, the Sega CD, the Sega, not the Sega Saturn.
Super Famicom.
The Sega Dreamcast, the Xbox, the GameCube, the PlayStation 2, the PlayStation 3, the Xbox 360, the Nintendo Wii, the Nintendo Wii U, Xbox One, the PlayStation 4, every iPhone and every handheld ever made. Don't do it. You'll regret it, apparently. So be sure, wait, I forgot what I was doing.
3 out of 5. I give you 3 out of 5
so
tails.
Our next episode is going to be 3 out of 5 tails.
Wait, what's his last name?
It's Miles Tails Prower.
Miles Tails Prowler.
Prower.
Prower?
Prower. Because Prower. It's supposed to be Miles Prower.
Miles Prower.
I got it. I got it. Yeah. It's like Nintendo Prower.
How did I not get that for years? Oh my God.
Our next episode is going to be hosted by Mr. Timel Chowdery himself.
Or Chowder.
Chowder, what are you going to be talking about next
Whichever
week?
Whichever you prefer.
Shut the fuck up.
I'm going to be talking about animated fantasy series Tales of Alethreon. It's an online series. You can check it out on YouTube. The channel is called Tales of Alethreon. They have a bunch of animated shorts and all sorts of good stuff. And I would really recommend.
Is that the Miles Tales Prower of Alethreon?
I don't get it. I'm just going to move on.
The Miles Tales Prower of Alethreon?
I award you no coins and may God have mercy on your soul.
God damn it.
It took Chowder just as long to get that joke as the original Tales joke.
And Jesus wept.
All right, so that's going to be... So Tales of Alethreon. Am I saying that right? Alethreon?
No, it's Tales of Sonic and Knuckles.
But that's going to air next week. That's May 26th, it looks like. Friday, May 26th. So make sure to try and read up on it then if you want to tune into the episode. If any of you listening want to contact us, you would be the first.
Do it.
We're on Twitter and Facebook at Geeking Program. You can also email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. If you're listening on iTunes and you leave a review, that's actually a really good way for more people to find out about the show. Liking us on SoundCloud is where we host, so a few different ways to go about that. All in all, if you want to know more, you go to commongeekingprogram.com. But that is it for us. Thank you for listening.
Wait, wrong show. Yo, real quick, can Ann Knuckles be the new cool?
Cool.
Ann Knuckles. I'm just gonna get the sound of Devin saying Ann Knuckles.
Ann Knuckles.
And then next week, Chowder is gonna be like, so the Tales of Alethreon, Ann Knuckles. And that's just gonna be...
Hey, Sonic! Enjoy your future! It's gonna be great!
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by me, Colin Ketchin. I was joined by Eddie, Losing Streak Ryan, Devin and Knuckles McConnell, and, well, I prefer Chowder. The podcast is sponsored by an underused fact-checking system, which would have prevented us from saying Windows 98 instead of Windows XP. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt. with this episode edited by me and featuring original music also by me. Man, I'm really doing everything around here. Well, actually, I'm not hosting next week's episode again. That's Chowder. He's talking about the show Tales of Alethreon, which you can find all over YouTube. And in the meantime, like us on Facebook, share us, subscribe on iTunes. Anything you can do, we really appreciate. So we hope that you'll listen in next week, and thank you for listening to this.
All right.
Ed, how's editing episode 18 going now that you figured out the clusterfuck that was our synchronization process?
It was bad, man. It was, well, because here's the main issue that I had was that the first time you guys synced up when Austin wasn't recording, Austin missed the first clap, and then mm-hmm. like 20 seconds later you did a second clap and he made it.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. then when Austin started recording, Austin missed the first clap, and then about 20 seconds later he made the second one.
So you lined it up like 8 minutes off.
So I was like, cool, perfect, easy peasy, lemon squeezy. And then I'm listening and I'm like, man, Austin's being really weird on this episode. And then eventually Pat was like, all right, and then, you know, the people joining me, and you did your thing. And then there was like 2 minutes of silence, and then Laura was like, and I'm Laura. And I'm like, okay, so clearly something's wrong here.